Good morning. We're going to open up the House Special Committee on Budget, the Subcommittee on General Government, Transportation, and Economic Development. This morning is Thursday, July 28, 2005. We are going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3504 relating to benefits for performing military service. Good morning, Dallas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3504 combines a number of concepts that were provided for in other House bills. They're detailed there for you. Basically, what this bill would do, now there is a dash one amendment to this bill, which in effect, there was a plan to have Fish and Wildlife provide hunting and angling licenses to certain active duty military people for free, and instead of that, there's an amendment to the bill that would require the military department to reimburse those people for that. The next bill on the list will appropriate money to the military department for that purpose. So, in effect, the same group of people will receive, in effect, their hunting and angling licenses at no cost. But they will have to front the money and then seek reimbursement. That is what was in formerly House Bill 3103 that would have provided these members with no-cost hunting and angling licenses. This bill has a program. This bill also has language that increases the education benefit program within the Department of Veterans Services. It's now $50 a month for certain members, for certain people. This would increase that monthly stipend to $150 a month, and there's money in another bill to support that. The bill also includes it creates the Oregon Troops to Teachers Program. This will be administered by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And this is to pay for tuition for veterans who will be attending college, and they will agree to teach in certain areas in public schools. And also, this bill would create the Oregon Veterans Emergency Financial Assistance Fund with the Department of Veterans Affairs again. And we're going to provide some money to the department for this purpose. But this is for the purpose of the department to provide emergency assistance to veterans and their families in case of need. All of these are part of the overall benefits of the military/veterans package that has been agreed upon. You will notice at 11 this morning, there's a Senate General Government Subcommittee which will take up the Senate balance of this. And we are scheduled to move these to full committees this afternoon. But House Bill 3504 incorporates, therefore, the intent of four different bills, House Bill 2864, House Bill 3103, House Bill 3053, and House Bill 2437 that were previously passed out of committee. And so that is the sum of what is briefly, it is in House Bill 3504. The next bill on the agenda is the money that appropriates. Is the bill that would appropriate money to fund these different programs.
So do we have any folks who would like to share their comments with us this morning? Do gentlemen like to come on up? Welcome, if you could just introduce yourselves for the record. Although I think we know who you are, but just to be official.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell with the Oregon National Guard, Deputy Director.
And Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think this is a good opportunity to, one, thank the legislature for their efforts. It's been since January, I think, that we've attempted to do some things for active service members in the great state of Oregon and also for veterans, and this is a culmination of that. There were several other things that, just to remind you, I guess, that we are going to leave on the table as we end this session, so we'll probably try to revisit some of those in the future, we hope. There's been some very good piece of legislation passed, and I think this is culmination with the dollars coming in. It'll help our people a lot, so we're excited about it, and we're grateful for it. I think the amendments, as I understand them, are going to work to the desire of where we want to go with this program, and we will establish, for our part, the Oregon Military Department will establish the regulations that govern the hunting and fishing licenses. And I might just add that of all the things that I think we've tried to accomplish in this session to help guardsmen, reservists, active duty, and veterans, when we poll our people, the hunting and fishing license is the number one item that people desire and want. So, again, I don't know how you rate that against health care, dental care, retirements, that sort of thing, but it certainly is the number one item that our folks come back. A large percentage, 80-85%.
Yeah, that raises a question for me on this. Every one of these programs are so deserved and so valuable. Are we diluting our ability in any one of these by spreading the dollars through so many different programs?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's clearly a, I would tell you that we could stack up the demand that would probably come right against the school budget number you guys have been dealing with if we really, really went out and asked our veterans and service members. I think realistically there's only so much that we can probably get accomplished between now and the next session. I guess the only fear that I would have after doing this for the last 20-some years and in this body is that we are concerned this may be the only shot we get because we haven't had one since 1951, 49, 48. There have been a lot of fixes that have been done, and we've had a lot of interest this session because of the current events, and we're hoping that we can keep this up front and keep it on the table to tweak and to add things that perhaps are even more beneficial as we learn how to learn what our people really need.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, this is a small, small price to pay on behalf of the service of those men and women who are serving this great state and this nation. I just wanted to be sure that we're not diluting the use of these dollars into any one area. But
a good deal of what we're doing is with these dollars, we're going to learn a lot as we go through this next 24 months. There's some of these things that we know we think are good, and we think they're going to be beneficial. But we also recognize that appetites change, interests change, and demands change. And as we recognize that and put this together in a complete package, working with the Director of Veterans Affairs, I think we'll be able to come back next session with some refinements and maybe some shifts and some. And we hopefully will have a more focused interest and not have to deal with so many competing ideas because there have been over 100 bills that we had to deal with to try to sort out which ones were going to be the ones we really wanted to work with and ones we didn't. They're all good bills, but realistically some of them just aren't going to be effective. So I think this is going to give us that breathing room that we really need to kind of sort
out. I would hope that this represents the best and the brightest of those concepts.
And it does. I would defer to my colleague here, but I think you would agree.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Smith, and again, members of the committee. House Bill 3504 does several very, very good things. A key to long-term employment and sustainability by individuals and by families is education. This increases the allocation for education from what was about $40,000 a biennium to just over $700,000 if you add what's already in my budget to what's allocated here. That is going to give a great many people a step up, not only for today, but for the long term. The other issue we were facing at the time that many of our troops were demobilizing was the fact that we had a very high unemployment rate. And people were coming not only from being unemployed to being deployed to then being demobilized and in some cases separating from the Guard or the active reserve, and they were unemployed. That created many, many family emergencies. So this body, by allocating these emergency dollars contained in this bill, will give us a way to sustain in a short-term way people for things as simple as keeping the lights on for a month. Giving them enough gas to get out and handle interviews for employment and that kind of thing. So on behalf of the men and women of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, I want to thank you as a committee and this body for giving us additional tools to assist this most deserving body of people. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. And I want to thank both of you for being here and being an integral part of this negotiations on this package and so forth. To say that I would echo Colonel Caldwell's comments in regards to the hunting and fishing license issue, It's certainly been something that's been expressed to me by the majority of the National Guard members that I've seen stateside and when I was in Iraq also. That and the educational benefit are the two things that are mostly mentioned as of importance to their desire to serve. And I'm glad that we're doing something. I'm disappointed that we could not reach consensus to do more in this package. Absent is a great opportunity, a bill that we passed that allowed Oregon taxpayers to make a decision to give part of their or all of their refund into an emergency assistance fund for families of guardsmen and reserve. It's unfortunate that that became a victim of politics within the project. Am I wrong about that?
That's in the Senate version.
Oh, it is?
The checkoff, yes, sir.
Okay, that's news to me. I did not know that. That's good. Well, that makes me feel better then. Unfortunately, we also did not address the 20% of the Guard that does not have health insurance with who they work. And we had an opportunity to do that through an innovative health savings account approach. It was a couple of million dollars in cost, and unfortunately, it wasn't able to move forward. So there are needs, clearly, still in the future. And my hope is, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee and members of the audience, that we do not forget in the next session that there are needs, there are appropriate needs. And as we go forward in this time of military readiness and deployment over the next 2 years, I think we will probably see those needs become more self-evident. And it's my hope that we'll have the political will to deal with them appropriately, as our nation's very safety depends on it. And it's very important we have the Guard and Reserve here to help us when we need them, not just for being deployed into combat zones, but for forest fires and floods and a whole number of issues that we face here in Oregon. So I'm pleased that we're moving forward, Mr. Chairman. It's in the mantra of the schools, I will say it's never enough.
Thank you. Very quickly, Section 6, I want to make sure we put this on the record, and I'm actually going to ask Anne-Marie and Dallas if they will give me a copy of the transcript of this conversation I'm about to have. I want to make sure that I echo the passion and the concern that our governor has for our military personnel, and let the under 2A, let the Department of Housing and Community Services know that they need to be doing everything they can to partner with you folks in terms of emergency or temporary housing, that the Department of Human Services needs to be doing everything they can to partner with you folks in terms of emergency medical and dental expenses, that the Oregon Department of Transportation is stepping up and doing everything they can to partner with you folks in terms of emergency transportation, and that the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department and the Employment Department and Oregon Small Business Development Network are doing everything they can to help our folks in starting a business, and then also making sure that any other agencies that would provide secondary services are also stepping up. Because, you know, they have a tremendous amount of resource as well that they can be providing, and I would hope you would call upon them to partner with you and to assist you as you're moving forward with this Oregon Veterans Emergency Financial Assistance Program, because they most definitely need to be at the table. And I can assure you later this afternoon I will be sending them a letter reminding them of the chair's commitment of this body to participate in helping you folks in any way they can. So I just want to point that out for the record.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to echo a comment you made, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I am very pleased and very proud of our governor.
Yeah.
For stepping up to the plate and being very very involved in making sure that we do the right thing here. And when I came home from Iraq, we spent about an hour together talking about what we could do for the Guard. And I knew right then, after spending an hour with the governor talking about these issues, that he would not only be in our corner, but he would fight to make sure that we did the right things here. And I'm very proud of him for that, and I thank him from the bottom of my heart. And I know that the troop certainly does, too, in the reserve.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to come up and speak on behalf of House Bill 3504? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3504, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3504, Representative Kropp.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 51.
Dash ones
to House Bill 3504.
Representative Krupp moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3504. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman, Krupp. I move House Bill 3504 as amended to the full House Budget Committee. It is full House, not the Joint Committee.
It's the full House. Okay.
The full House Budget Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Krupp moves House Bill 3504 with the -1 amendments to the full House Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so move.
Carried.
Representative Krupp is agreed to do this. And very quickly, before I close this work session, I want to thank Representative Nelson for all the work that she has done in funneling in multiple issues to get us down to this point. So with that said, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3504. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 5163, the Military Veterans Benefits Package. Dallas.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Committee, House Bill 5163 is the appropriation bill that would fund the programs that you just approved in 3504, plus it would provide $54,000 to the Oregon Employment Department to provide for transportation needs of veterans as they seek employment. This has to do with bus passes and van service, and they're going to try to work in outlying areas to try to see if they can provide more accessibility to getting these people to job interviews. I would point out that these appropriations are one time and are not to be built into the base budgets, so that when and the Colonel and Mr. Willis talked to this point, that this is a test period. So we may see these come back again as requests and policy option packages in the 07-09, but it is not to be in the base budget. They want to see how this works, and as they move forward then in the next budget cycle, you may see it in the form of policy option packages. I wanted to get that on the record. And also, again, the Colonel and Mr. Willis spoke to this, that part of that coming forward, we have to show some outcomes and how these contributed or achieved what we thought trying to accomplish with the appropriations. So the -4 amendment to the bill briefly provides $631,000 to Veterans Affairs for the increased education benefit, $165,000 to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission for the Oregon Troops to Teachers program, $350,000 to the Military Department to refund those folks for the hunting and angling licenses, again $54,000 to the Employment Department for to provide transportation to veterans, and $500,000 to the Veterans Affairs to provide that emergency financial assistance to the families and to veterans and their families. That is the sum of what is in the -4 amendment.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
a question for perhaps Colonel Caldwell or Director Willis. What's the total amount of tuition dollars that are available to the Guard?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Oregon National Guard. Presently, right now, the federal government is providing up to $4,500 annually to a member of the Oregon Guard who's currently enrolled in the Guard and currently enrolled in college or post-secondary education. On top of that, they would receive their annual drill pay and their annual pay for going to, as long as they're an active member, receiving pay. There's also a loan that they can get up to $25,000 that will be repaid by the federal government if they remain in the Guard after their initial six-year enlistment. So every year after that, they can apply for loan repayment, and that will go against that up to $25,000. Now, that's dependent, and this becomes rather what of a matrix you'd have to look at. That is dependent, the loan is, on what kind of job skill you're in. So perhaps an infantryman isn't offered that. Perhaps a medic is. So that varies. but they can guarantee themselves that they will get $4,500 tuition assistance, and the last thing they'd get is a Montgomery GI Bill, which is $200 a month, $220 per month, every month they're in school. So what we have determined on this is that we've got a gap typically at the universities. For those that are going to the universities, we get a gap of about somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000 per student annually, depending on which university, because fees, books, room and board aren't considered in that.
Are they not eligible?
If I may follow up. Please.
Would they not be eligible for the Oregon Opportunity Grant and
they would
Pell Grants?
They would. Okay. This is on top of anything else they can get at.
Okay, so that becomes in addition to traditional financial aid that may
that
be available.
Correct.
Okay,
yeah,
and I think that's very important to point out, that that gap can be filled through
that's
traditional
right.
financial aid.
And with the program that we have currently, it's 100% tuition assistance after this legislature changed it, we can make that gap up. And what we do is we go through each one of our students, our soldier students, and then we try to figure out what that gap is, and we're hoping to be able to make that gap up so we can get them at 100%.
And so, Mr. Chairman, where does the total $700,000 that Director Willis was referring to, where does that come into play in this entire picture here?
Well, I probably have to defer to Jim, but I think the difference is one's an active member, could be a veteran, could not be. I mean, not necessarily everybody that's in the Guard is a
right.
veteran at that point. So if they have veteran status and can apply for that, then I would assume that they would do the well like we're doing with our tuition assistance, state tuition assistance program, see what the individual has, and then try to fill in that gap, try to make up the difference. Is that how you would operate it?
Yeah, I'll follow up.
Please, yeah.
With the plethora of programs that are available, how do we help our veterans to understand what is available to them and help them to systematically walk through the maze of programs?
Well, if I could lump onto that question, not just the ones that we're implementing, but the various federal programs as well that might be available.
Perfect.
Which are changing.
Yeah. Chair Smith, members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Jim Willis, Director of Veterans Affairs. We do this information sharing with eligible people in several different ways, and let me give you an example. When we demobilize folks from the Guard and from the active reserve, we go and we cover the entire spectrum of the benefits that are available to them, to include education. Also, we have brochures, trifold brochures that explain what the educational benefits are. When we receive the DD Form 214, the separation paper, the honorable discharge paper, they are sent, every veteran that returns here to Oregon is sent what we call a welcome home package. In that welcome home package is, again, all benefits fully explained and how to access them. Also, we go out to various veterans groups and answer questions. We go to county fairs and set up our booths. We go to the state fair, the full run of the state fair, and the contacts, the one-on-one contacts made there are amazing. Big numbers. So we use a lot of different methodologies, and finally we distribute our Veterans News newspaper every 2 months. I believe it now goes to nearly 80,000 people. It's well shared throughout the state. In fact, it's shared throughout the nation because all the other state agencies get it throughout the United States and we get theirs. So we see what good ideas are being passed backwards and forwards on, especially on benefit issues. So as a result of this session, we will be completely redoing our benefits brochures because of these enhancements. And that's a good way to describe it. They have been enhanced and they're very good. And that way these folks will know what they're eligible for and how to access them. And
I think a tremendous opportunity and also a tremendous burden is being placed upon your shoulders, in that the expectations of 91 people in this building is going to be very high. And, obviously we're going to be wanting to ensure that this gets implemented as efficiently and as effectively as possible in a timely manner.
And Mr. Chair, right along with that comment is a question I wanted to ask you. One of the things we've done this session is we have demanded performance measures of virtually every dollar that we've spent here. And I want to make sure that you all put performance measures in place here for these various aspects of these programs, because I want to be able to come back in 2 years, first of all, to measure what we've done and how we've done it. And I think that will play an important role in ascertaining if these or some of these come back as policy packages to be part of the regular budgetary process. So I would very much like to see performance measures be a part of this. It'd be critical.
Well, let me throw this out on the table for the committee. What if we asked in 12 months to have just an update at eBoard on the progress of 3504, just to ensure that we're moving forward on this?
I would agree, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I would just forewarn the committee at this juncture, I guess, is a good opportunity. One of the things that we brought up in our budget session and we fully intend to do is part of what's happened in this session has been explained here, this laundry list of opportunities and benefits. One of the things that we recognized early on was that we needed to come up with what we termed a reintegration team, and we formed one inside the military department to work these very issues. And this includes everything from benefit packages, but also for immediate needs of soldiers that are returning with difficult problems, whether they be jobs, whether they be, you know, mental health issues, and where to access these particular programs. We've never been designed to do this. I mean, frankly, this is not something that we have ever put together inside our department. We just didn't have the mechanism. So we created that out of Hyde, and we basically have pulled what federal resources we could, and then we shifted some state resources. And we were able to do that at the year end of the last budget cycle because we'd actually had some savings thanks to decent weather, frankly, and we moved money that we had scheduled for heating and lights and this sort of thing, and we were able to move it and free it up and pay these positions. It's not in our budget. We've gone to the feds. We've asked the feds to step up. They haven't at this point. We don't see it coming, and we thoroughly intend to be here in September. And I've told our budget committee we'll be here in September with a package because we don't have the personnel to do this. And we're working off of basically we're robbing Peter and paying Paul right now. And we're forming that package. We're still banging on the feds' door to try to get them to support it. We think at this point where they're going to be able to support part of it, but not all of it. So I plan to be back here in September to do exactly what you just said. And I'll give you a classic example is that, and I stole an individual from Jim Willis, as a matter of fact, out of his public affairs shop, the halftime person that I could put in our public affairs shop to do this very thing. And right now, I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul. I do not have that in my budget.
Well, then I guess I'd be of the opinion that we ought to have you come to the e-board to share that with us because we need to be stepping up to help you. And at the same time, back to my earlier comment, I want to ensure that every other state agency that ought to be at the table complementing your effort is there. And I don't want to wait 2 years to find out they didn't step up. I want to find out as soon as possible so we, as a committee, can help you.
And I want to put a plug in for the other state agencies, and particularly Mr. Willis's group. This reintegration team, again, was something that we're building this bike while we ride it because we, frankly, have not been in this area before. And thanks to Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and all the other agencies in the state of Oregon as well as the federal government, we have formed this team. We've had two summits. We just had the last one 2 weeks ago. We had a plan. We've executed the plan. We came back to review that plan, find out where the gaps are, and we found many because we didn't know, frankly, what we were doing. We were trying to guess, put a lot on the wall, figure out what these people are going to need, what their demands are going to be or what their necessities are, not demands, necessities, and try to fill those gaps. And these state agencies and Jim's group have been absolutely sterling as it's come to they've come to the table. There were things out there we frankly didn't even know existed because we just don't deal in this kind of stuff. And job helps, on mental health issues, on all kinds of issues that face our soldiers as they return. And I'll just, for the good of the order, we've got one deployment coming up again in March. We got a third of the 116th in Eastern Oregon, primarily in Central Oregon. They're coming home in November, we're not, well, this isn't done. I mean, we're going to continue and continue to do these mobilizations. After the March deployment, which will be the essentially every single battalion in the Army battalion in the Oregon National Guard, which there are 14, and we will have deployed every single battalion to this effort as of March. And then we start over. And we do not see this thing ending in the next 12 months. This is going to be a continuing effort. So we're going to start back and start redeploying guys for a second time, units for a second time. So this is going to be a continuing thing, and that's why we felt it imperative that we create a group of people that can service these veterans, service these soldiers, and get them what they need when they come home so they're not just sitting out there wondering. And a lot of that is, how do you reach them? As Jim indicated, when they come home, we give them 5 days of heavy-duty briefings, and they get all the information. Well, now we're going back 30 and 60 and 90 days later and saying, well, what do you guys recall from that briefing? And their typical answer is nothing. They said, all we wanted to do was get the hell out of there.
Exactly.
And so, so we've got the team going back out to them now and getting them individually at their units and trying to re-educate them. So it's a continual process. We're going to have to do the things, as he's indicated, with newsletters, with every kind of information transfer thing that we can come up with. We're doing that. Emails, direct mail, newsletters, face-to-face, and we're going to continue to do that. Again, we didn't have the resources to do it. We've sucked it up so far. We will do whatever we have to do. We're going to continue this. This is a very high priority of General Reese, and it will be the number one item in our agenda. Whether or not the legislature feels compelled to fund it or not, we will, because we know that this is absolutely essential to the health and well-being of our future and to these people that have served their country.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much money are you talking about? September, just the ballpark, either way, high low?
$250,000.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, one last comment.
Please, of course.
Director Willis, just a quick suggestion for you. After this package is adopted and you have to reprint your brochures that you hand out, you might want to highlight or print in a different color print the new benefits that we have made available, and that does two things. I think it helps the people reading the brochure understand that changes have been made. This is what it was. This is what's been enhanced. And also, I think it will help them understand that the legislature and the governor support them by adding these things in. And I think for morale reasons, that would be very, very helpful.
Chair Smith and Representative Krupp, we are going to do that. We're also going to publish a document immediately following session that is a capsulization of everything that's been done. And we're going to share that of course, with Colonel Caldwell and his folks. We'll include the military stuff so that, you know, if you pick up the document and you're a guard or a reservist or you're a veteran or a family member, right, you're going to be able to use it.
Good.
And I just want to make one quick comment on the reintegration team at the Oregon Military Department. Two things. First of all, the people on that team are on that team because they want to be. That is absolutely key. Secondly, there are many people on that team who have served in Iraq, and some of whom have been wounded in Iraq. So when the soldiers come back from Iraq or Afghanistan, these people can talk their language. They've been there and done that, which I think is great. And finally, with regard to sharing information, one of the key things that the Guard has done, and their chaplains have helped immensely with this, is what we call family reintegration. And that is to warn the family members, and it is a warning, I hate to put it in that language, but that's what it is that the person coming home to you from war may be different in some ways. And here are the ways that you can look at. Here's some ways the family can reintegrate together and get through this thing, as it were. And so the reason we go to talk to family is we found out when we talk about benefits and we're talking to the spouse about benefits, that spouse is going to remember. That soldier may not, but that spouse is going to. And that helps when the family needs to reach out for something that they've earned. This family's earned that benefit. And you as the public policy makers have granted it to them, and we as the providers are now getting the tools to make it happen. So that I just want to congratulate the Colonel and General Reese and all of them over there for doing those family reintegrations. They're just key to this whole thing. We do those before the troops come home, just a little bit before, a couple of months out, I think.
Right. And I might just tag on to that was that one of the things that we thought was important is we sent the team out to different law enforcement groups as they met, like sheriff's associations and right. local chiefs of police and this sort of thing. We tried to get as much information as we could out to them to let them understand that we're about ready to put 800 new people from a war zone back in your communities. The good news is that we have heard only of a couple of incidents where law enforcement was involved with our soldiers. Only one out of these, just a few, ended up with an arrest. The remainder of them actually ended up being dealt with by the local law enforcement official on the spot, understanding where the soldier had been, understanding the situation, and basically helping them solve that issue and not become part of the court system, which was one of our great fears. Had we not, I believe, I firmly believe, and this is anecdotal, we don't have, you know, empirical evidence to show in every county and every community, but I believe that had we not done that, we would have had a far greater number of these returning soldiers, you know, in the law enforcement, in the judicial system, that probably didn't need to be there for one reason or another. So I think that was one of our, in my mind, that's one of our greatest successes at this point, is we prevented the, you know, burdening that system, getting this particular person the help they needed, and then focusing that up to us so that we could react immediately with the reintegration team and get that individual the help they need and deserve. And because it is available, whether it be from the feds, from the state, from the county, you know, we were able to do that. And it's just been, you know, great success stories we've been getting back from the county veteran service officers, which this legislature is taking care of, and we greatly appreciate that.
Let me ask you a question on those very quickly before we move on. How have we taken care of the local county veterans officers?
Jim talk to that.
Yeah,
but basically, it's the money that has come through to help these people do their job.
Okay. Yes, thank you. And thank you, Chair Smith. Basically, there's an enhancement to their existing funding. I believe the package is about $2.6 million over what we had been allocating, which was a shade over half a million, about $600,000 was what was occurring in the last biennium. So
the total is 3.2?
About 3.2 about million 3.2. Total. Right. So it's
we've quadrupled.
Oh, yes.
The funding for that.
Significant increase. It speaks to their value in terms of servicing the Oregon veteran, their families, and survivors. And it speaks to the level of professionalism that we are expecting from every level of veteran service officer. The folks that work for me, the folks that work in the county, and then the national service officers that work for the congressionally chartered veterans organizations, and those are stationed in Portland.
And I'm sure you're getting the message out to them. They need to be really proactive in stepping up and working with these returning soldiers.
It's a good time as any to share with you this, Chair Smith and members of the committee. I see this entire allocation of benefits to all of that are eligible as a system. And whether they enter the system through a county veteran service officer or the state or through a national service officer and ultimately end up either in an education program, vocational training, health services at the VA hospital or one of the clinics or whatever, it simply calls upon all of us who serve as veterans to do it at the highest possible level with the best possible quality for these people who have earned the right to receive those services. When the system has a problem, if there's a long wait to receive the federal health care, the veteran believes the system is broken. And he does not care, or she does not care, if that's a county, state, or federal issue. As far as they're concerned, the benefit system to vets is broken. So I think it's our job at every level, county, state, and federal, to work together to enhance and strengthen that system the best that we can. And so I think you're going to find that the county veteran service officers that are here in Oregon today, the length and breadth, the rural, the urban, the suburban, and the metro, are all very concerned about doing the best that they can, especially with regard to these returning veterans. So I think this the body has done a wonderful job in enhancing their ability to do that work.
One last thought without trying to monopolize the time here. Just a bubblegum piece of advice. I would strongly encourage having our local county officers participate on the boards of Children and Family Services and the Workforce Investment Boards, because there's an opportunity for them to integrate with the whole slew of folks who deal with health and human service issues and those folks who deal with employment issues, including community colleges and universities, employers, and the like, and it's a chance for those county officers to really integrate into those agencies I mentioned earlier, who we are going to be expecting to step up and lock arm in arm with you in partnership. And that's just one way at the local level to really bridge all those services together, those two groups.
So, thank you.
If I could add one more comment, so it goes back to what Representative Krupp said about the health care savings account issue. Just to kind of update this committee, and I think Representative Krupp's information as well, Congress has been working this TRICARE issue, which is the family health care program. They've currently extended it out to 12 months past the deployment that they can receive these benefits. There's amendments to the bill that were passed in the Senate just last week on a voice vote to add that permanent package to all Guard and reservists, so they would have it permanently, not just post-deployment. So whether they'd served or didn't serve, they would have a health care benefit. I don't know if that's going to pass this Congress or not. The primary issue that we have right now with that particular program is that we are having a lot of difficulty getting providers, and I'm thinking particularly about the chairman here, who has a vested interest in soldiers who are deployed right now out of Eastern Oregon. Just to give you an example about providers, we have two providers in Ontario, and the next local provider is one practical nurse in LeGrand, and then the next one is the Dalles. So we have no TRICARE providers in the rest of that area, and we've only got a handful in Bend. So Eastern Oregon has been hit real hard. We've got pretty good coverage throughout the rest of the state, but not in Eastern Oregon. So even though that is there, as we've as Representative Krupp tried so diligently to do to get something going at the state level,
will you send me that thought in a just a quick memo?
Yes, sir.
Not right now, but just send that to me. I'd like to follow up on that.
And that is one of the primary issues we have, is getting providers for these folks. Even if the coverage does arrive and the feds do step up, it's going to be an issue. It's going to be a continuing issue, and I'm not sure how we're going to deal with that at the state level. Maybe some tax benefit or something for providers.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say that thought came to mind. We have set a precedence in, I think, extending or enhancing a tax credit for rural physicians. And I think it would be appropriate for us to consider a model that would be the same for those who choose to give them an incentive to be part of the TRICARE system in the rural areas that are underserved.
It is a significant problem in rural Oregon, right?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Buckin.
Give me some thoughts on why it's a problem and what the responsibility of the VA hospital is to put providers in rural areas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bakian, there's actually two issues there. One is veterans providers provide for veterans, not for families and not for current serving people. There is service available in Eastern Oregon at Walla Walla. It's in Washington, but it's in Eastern Oregon pretty much, and Boise. And I think there's a clinic in Bend right now, too. Mm-hmm. So we've got some coverage in that vicinity, but that only takes care of the veteran. The families, the soldiers who are serving today and have family health care needs, are in this TRICARE system, and therefore they have to go onto the open market to receive health care coverage. And that coverage is simply the doctors just aren't there. And what happens is that if without a doctor signing up, then the family can show up at the, you know, at an emergency room or a family physician, and TRICARE will pay what they pay, which is considerably less than what the docs are accustomed to getting.
You mean there are not doctors that have signed up for that plan?
That's correct.
And they're not signing up for that plan because of the level of reimbursement?
Correct. Absolutely. That is the issue. And we simply don't have the coverage in Central and Eastern Oregon that we need to provide it for families and for soldiers, because soldiers would get the same thing. After they return and they're home for that 12-month period, they can continue to use that coverage. But if there's no docs to provide it, then they get a bill. They get the reimbursement that TRICARE provides, and then the patient, or in this case the soldier or his family, gets a separate bill for the difference. If they sign up, they agree to take that reimbursement schedule, however anemic it may be, which is really the problem, and it's tied to Blue Cross Blue Shield, which you all know what difficulty that is with respect to providers in Oregon and the problems that brings on. So it is an issue that frankly we just didn't get dealt with this session, and I'm not sure and it's going to take more than us sitting here in the next 5 minutes to solve it. It's a bigger issue than that. So, but I think it's something we need to work on between now and our next session so we can try to address it, particularly if they are successful at Congress, to give this for every guardsman, every reservist, regardless if they've been mobilized or not.
Right.
Then it's just going to get exponentially more difficult to deal with.
But I would hope you'll send me that information.
I will, and I'm working with Mr. Campbell at the governor's office, because the governor's concerned about it.
Perfect.
And Mr. Campbell is we've been talking about an interim group to try to work something up that we can do exactly what we're talking about here in just this conversation.
If I can assist on that, please let me know.
Yes, sir, we'll do that.
All righty. Anyone else? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank Is there anyone else who would like to share their thoughts on House Bill 5163? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5163 and open up a session on House Bill 5163. Representative Krupp.
Chairman, I move that we adopt the Dash 4 amendments. Is that correct, Dallas? To House Bill 5163.
Representative Krupp moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 5163. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Krupp.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5163 as amended to the full budget committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Krupp moves House Bill 5163 with the Dash 4 amendments to the House Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved. We will carry this one. I do not believe there's any other issues to come before us today, and so therefore I'm going to thank everyone for their participation, and with that we are going to adjourn.
Senate Special Committee on Budget, General Government Subcommittee, 28th July 2005, Hearing Room 174, 11 o'clock a.m.